Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call the Legacy Finance Committee to order. This is our second meeting, and welcome, everyone. If you'd like to be recognized during the meeting, certainly reach out by using hand or even the old classic way of kind of jumping up and down and waving. I'm okay with that. if you want to reach out to Mr. Molzon, certainly he's on top of the game, or my committee legislative assistant, Katie. Good morning, everyone. I'd like to start, Ms. Hirsch, if you could help us with taking the roll, please.
Can you hear me?
Yes, perfect.
Okay, excellent. All right. Chair Lilly?
Here.
Here. Vice Chair Jordan?
Here.
Here. Representative Green?
Here.
Here. Representative Acom?
Here.
Here. Representative Anderson?
Anderson present.
Present. Representative Bowe?
Here.
Here. Representative Christensen?
Present.
Present. Representative Hassan?
Present.
Present. Representative Murphy?
Present.
Representative Nelson?
Present.
Present. Representative Erdahl?
I'm here.
Here. Representative Wozlowick?
Present.
Present. And Representative Zhang?
Present.
Present. Excellent. Everyone's here.
Thank you. We have a quorum. So with that, Representative Jordan, I was wondering if you had an opportunity to peek at the minutes, if you'd be willing to move those, please.
I have, and I moved the minutes from our last meeting.
Thank you, Vice Chair Jordan. I'm sorry. Go ahead again. Sorry.
I was just going to say, I can't remember the date. I think it was 2 weeks ago, but I moved the minutes from our last meeting.
Thank you. So the minutes from the last meeting have been moved. Any questions in regards to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed? I was actually thinking about this. I got a little, one of my constituents gave me a mini gavel. The minutes have been approved. A little piece of buckthorn. So as we get going here this morning, I'm actually really quite excited to have this opportunity to meet with the folks from our art community, and thank you all for coming out today. And we're just kind of starting as we're rolling out the committee, as everybody knows, into this session. Many of our recipients of our funds have been really hit hard with the COVID and what that means. And so this is happening in all of our funds and all of our projects throughout everything in our work area. And as you know, about 19.75% of our money goes into the arts area, arts and cultural area. And so today I thought what we'd start off on, and then is I've invited the folks that work in our arts area. I talked to the Minnesota Citizens in Arts and Mr. Redman and these folks, and just to kind of focus in and see what it's meant in reality and what these folks are challenging. And I'm sure you've seen it all in each of your local communities and throughout the state of what this is, the impacts. The arts community is so vital to our state, and this was recognized in our, you know, the constitutional amendment and passing that, and recognized, you know, it's really kind of neat. In the amendment, the arts is mentioned, you know, at least three times, and it's so important to what makes Minnesota a great state. But anyways, these groups have just been really pounded hard. And if you're following in the news, of course, I'm sure you are, in the staffing cuts that they've had to make, because obviously people can't come into these, you know, places. Some of these places we'll hear today, you know, you can't get a show. Even if tomorrow COVID's over, it's not like it starts right up again. So anyways, we're just kind of starting here just to hear the story, what's going on with our arts community. And we're going to hear more from other areas in the fund as we move forward. Next week, we're going to hear from all across the funds and what it's meant. But so I'd like to kind of pass it to Mr. Redmond, and he kind of would introduce kind of the story here. And we've had a bunch of, I'm so excited. We've got some amazing people that have volunteered to come today and tell their stories of the impacts of arts in their groups. So I'm kind of hoping you can, if you have questions, you know, committee members, we can kind of hold off to the end after we've heard the presentation. But we're going to, you know, there's all sorts of questions that we all want to ask. But let's just get going here, Mr. Redmond, and kind of tell the story. And it's, you know, Minnesota's been so blessed by the work of these folks that we're going to hear from in the arts. And it really makes Minnesota a great place to live. And we got to figure out how to, you know, get through where we're at now and then to punch through into the future. And we're going to get there. So go ahead, Mr. Redmond, and thank you for coming.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, good morning. My name is Larry Redmond. I represent in this capacity Minnesota Citizens for the Arts, which is a statewide advocacy organization of all of the arts groups in Minnesota. We are not the State Arts Board. We are not the Regional Arts Councils. We're not the government. We are the recipient organizations, as Chair Lilly has pointed out. We're very appreciative of this opportunity to speak from the field. And we know later you're going to be hearing from the State Arts Board and the Regional Arts Council about basic operational issues, about equity questions, about how they're operating for the field. But today, as we understand our charge, it was really to kind of give you, put a face on the difficulties that the arts community has experienced because of the COVID pandemic. So we're very zeroed in on that topic. And we're very appreciative to have that opportunity. By way of just very quick, my only purpose here is to frame six people who are going to follow me, who are really the frontline folks of this, who can tell you far more than me. So I'm going to be fairly brief here and just kind of frame this. You should know that there are well over 1,200 not-for-profit arts organizations in Minnesota. This is a large number by any state standard. They are small, they're medium-sized, they're large, they're in dance, they're in painting, they're in literary arts, they're in theater, they're in music. Minnesota has one of the most vibrant arts communities in America. We're a big deal. We have major international arts. We also have grassroots art that's key, that speaks for our people. That's part of our legacy, and what Minnesota Citizens of the Art indeed does is speak for all of those people who are trying to protect that as we go into the future. As we proceed today through our presentation, let me take a moment to tell you what we're not here to tell you. We are not here to tell you that we think we're special, that we have somehow suffered with the arts community more than anyone else. Our empathy and our concern for our fellow citizens is extraordinary. Our seamstresses were making masks at the very beginning of this when masks were not around. We were looking for every opportunity to help people at the same time that these organizations were going through problems. We understand that whether you're a restaurant worker or owner, whether you're any kind of retailer, whether you're a bowling alley owner, a resort owner, or anyone in any sphere, those pains and problems are there. We are not here to tell you we think we're special. We're just here to tell you about how this has affected us. And I also, it would be inappropriate for us not to make a special mention to the healthcare workers, whether they're doctors, nurses, or the custodians in those hospitals, who are caring for everybody in this moment. And from the arts community, we want to tell you, we salute them and we'll do everything we can to support those people who are making it possible for the rest of Minnesota. As COVID bore its kind of menacing microscopic things into all of our lives, Minnesota's arts performances were suddenly and without much warning shut down. We understand why that was necessary, but it was a gigantic pain. This came not only just in immediate cost, but it came at ongoing risk towards the extraordinary work of all these arts organizations that are in every one of our 87 counties in Minnesota. The arts are everywhere in this regard. Never before have the ongoing contributions that many of our private contributors, our citizens, whether they're $10 contributions or $10,000 contributions, and they're not enough $10,000 contributions, by the way, but have they been more important than right now? Institutional donor support has been great, and most certainly the legacy dollar grants that you grant through the State Arts Board Regional Arts Council system have been key to trying to hold this together so that we can protect that legacy. The arts have always been part of Minnesotans' lives. The COVID pandemic will not stop our resolve to assure that access to the arts are available to Minnesotans in every community, in every neighborhood, in every economic sphere, in every ethnic group, and so forth. Our commitment is unchallenged. It may be challenged, but it is unstopped in terms of what we are dealing with here. Although the arts are not alone in this problem, we do have our particular problems, which some of which you're going to hear about today. There are 5.5 million people in Minnesota, but over 23 million attendances to arts organizations every year. That's a lot of our arts attendances. This is a big part of our state. You're going to hear today about layoffs, not a unique thing in the arts, but you're going to hear specifically how that is affected. You're going to hear about salary reductions, which has certainly been necessary and have taken place throughout the arts community. You're going to hear about injury to individual artists who are the core of our artistic mission. But you're also going to hear about stories about people who are not artists, but are every day, whether they're electricians or plumbers or whatever, they're absolutely key to producing, that are also affected by this. You're also certainly going to hear about the deafening silence that presently fills our stages, our museums, and our other arts organizations whom the public rely on in all this time. But you will hear, as I said before, that despite this wreckage, the arts organizations have continued virtually and otherwise to continue with their mission to reach out to the public, to try to provide them some kind of arts outlet, this, and to hold things together in the future. So we can do that. In 2008, as Chair Lilly has already pointed out, the people of Minnesota did this extraordinary thing by enshrining in our Constitution that various activities, whether they be about land, water, the parks, or arts and culture, were there and would be protected in the future. I don't think any of us, when we were working on this in those years that led up to 2008, foresaw this kind of a pandemic that would cause the problem. But we certainly saw that there would be unexpected events. But we knew that the resolve for Minnesota for those activities, including the arts, would not go away, and that we needed to have some kind of structure that would guarantee it and protect that future that was there. That's what we're going to talk about today. That's why we are so grateful to the extraordinary good work you, the legislature, you, this committee, does through Legacy, and why we're grateful and why we're looking forward to the conversations with you about that over the next few months. With that being said, I want to get out of the way and let you hear from people who are on the front lines of this and know this far better than I could ever possibly, and explain it far better than I ever could. So with that, Mr. Chair, let me turn it back over to you. And I think you have a list of the folks that you want to go through there. Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members of the committee, for your patience.
Thank you, Mr. Redmond, for laying a pathway here and a plan for today. And thank you for your work. And I know you were one of the people that was very involved in passing the legacy in the first place. And, just an amazing opportunity for our state. And many states have contacted us and or me and said how jealous they are of what we have going here. But that's another story. Miss Larson, I think you're first. Please introduce yourself, and thank you very much for coming, and go ahead when you're ready, please. We're going to have you start again, I think. We can't hear you.
Cheryl, you're on mute.
Can you hear me now?
Yep, perfect.
I'm sorry.
That's part of the bingo game. That's part of the bingo game now. Yeah.
Okay, start over. All right. Good morning. Good morning. My name is Cheryl Larson, and I'm the executive director for Central Square in Glenwood, Minnesota. I'm honored to be here today and honored to be asked to give you a brief glimpse into my world. I believe that my testimony will represent the rural western region of the great state of Minnesota and my organization. I'm honored also to be here with the other panelists, of whom I've admired as well. So thank you for this opportunity. What is Central Square? Well, Central Square is a nonprofit arts organization. It's also a historic landmark building located in Glenwood, Minnesota, in Pope County, the county seat of Glenwood's county seat of Pope County, and we're located in, like I said, west central Minnesota. Originally, our location was established in 1916 as Central High School. As most of you probably know, in the 80s and 90s, there was a trend for schools to move out to shared communities and have regional schools. Well, that's pretty much what happened with Central High School in Glenwood, Minnesota, and it was closed in 1991. There was a wrecking ball loomed in the future, and the citizens of Glenwood rose up to save our beautiful historic theater. We have a gorgeous theater that seats 1,044 attendees with balconies and amazing acoustics. It's the largest theater between Fargo and Minneapolis. Like I said, built in 1936. It also was attached to a gymnasium. And in 1995, Central Square was formed as a nonprofit arts organization, and here we are 26 years later. Central Square is the only arts supporting organization that provides a full range of media and arts activities to all of its residents of Pope County throughout the entire year continuously. So I like to think that, you know, all things are relative. When I say that, you know, what the Ordway is to St. Paul, Central Square is to Glenwood, right? Because we're the only organization in this entire county that does what we do. Needless to say, being a previous high school, it's a very large facility, and it has great sentimental value to the residents of this community. Over the years, we've hosted gallery exhibitions, classes, we have banquet facilities, commercial kitchens, we have the gymnasium, and then we also have classrooms that have been renovated into tenant space, where we also host several other nonprofit organizations under our umbrella. We've had 18 years of concert series performances. Every year we sell season tickets, and it has expanded year after year. 4 years ago, we expanded our reach to open a retail art store located in beautiful downtown Glenwood. And it has given us an opportunity to represent the work of over 30 area artists. We sell their artwork on a commission basis. We have a membership. They volunteer their time to offset their commissions. And we call it the box office because it's a great downtown location for them to pick up show tickets for all of our shows. It's literally two blocks away from what we call our main campus. But being on Main Street, it acts almost as a billboard for us to get our message out there, increase our access to our residents in our community. Our mission has always been to engage our community with dynamic performances, and we work hard to expand public access and preserve this historical landmark building. Again, like I say, when I say I gave out $11,000 in refunds, it's not going to sound like a ton of money, but when you compare it to my annual budget, what might be $110,000 to the Ordway is the same as $11,000 to me, right? Because I don't have that same population base to draw from. So anyway, my background, I started at Central Square in 2013. Prior to that, I worked mostly in the hospitality industry as an event manager and mostly as banquet and convention services for some major hotel chains. Currently, I also hope that I can bring a perspective to you because I also am on the board of directors for Region 4 Lake Region Arts Council. And I have served on that board for the last year and a half. And I can honestly say that I have read every grant application to that region from Fargo to Morris for the last 1.5 years. So though those organizations may be different, which they all are, we all share a common thread and we all have a common goal is to bring arts to our communities, right? So I can also testify that I see many similarities in my story with other arts organizations throughout the West Central part of the state. Comparing what's happening with COVID, our last full year of performances was our record-breaking year. In fact, we've been blessed to break records year after year for the last 4 years, and I do believe in part that is because of legacy funding. Legacy funding started about, it takes time to build traffic. It takes time to build attendance, build awareness. And with the legacy grant being relatively, well, I wouldn't say new anymore, 6 to 8 years, something, don't quote me on that. But we're just getting our footing going in 2019. We were going gangbusters. We were very excited to the point where we actually had to hire new staff. And we got it in our budget to hire new managers to support the organization, the two locations, and we hired them in February, and March 11th, we hired my second assistant. March 13th, we closed our doors. We went into lockdown. Trying to train somebody you don't really know through a screen to do stuff that you don't really know what you're even doing was quite a challenge. We followed all of the governor's orders. We did all the prescribed guidances. I literally was reading the COVID situation update every single day. Sorry, I have a few notes. looking back on it, I think our greatest struggle at the time is that we didn't know. It was the unknown. We didn't know what to do. Obviously, being in an event planning industry where concerts, you don't just book, we don't anyway, we don't just book them overnight. You know, I usually have my concert series planned a year in advance. So here I am now a week before the kickoff off my season. I've already sold 33,000 in advance ticket sales, which again was an all-time record. And 7 days before the kickoff of our concert series, we canceled the show. And we've had entertainment here. This was an international group from Canada, the Sultans of String. We've had entertainment here from across international, national, state, regional, and local levels. We had just expanded our series from 6 shows to 8 shows. And We just canceled the first one because we didn't know what to do. So we're hoping that something would come along that would change. Now we've moved into closing our doors at our downtown retail location as well. I'm sending my maintenance staff out to sanitize hand doorknobs and masks and hand washing stations. And, you know, that's the whole focus, again, as we continue to train. As I look at my calendars, all I see is cancel, 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 cancel. Everything started to just get canceled. And I wasn't able to recruit volunteers. They weren't leaving the house. There was nothing to recruit them for. Programs. We support other programs in the community. We have a youth dance program. They stopped meeting. I lost the revenue from their, they pay me a small rental fee for the use of space, and we lost that rental income. We have a Taekwondo martial arts studio. That closed. We lost that revenue. We have, the school uses our gymnasium for team practices because the school out in the country is now overflowing and they're coming back to us. And we were thrilled to that. To have that coming back to us. And now that's all canceled. And community events, we always host the annual Memorial Day program for the community, and the community responds so heavily. It's a fabulous celebration day for us. That's canceled and now put into the mix now that my auditorium, my heating and ventilation systems on my roof in summer fail, and now I have to buy a $36,000 air conditioner. And I'm still trying to train new people on how to manage an arts organization that isn't even doing any arts activities. By summer, our calendars were empty. I looked at that this morning. So we decided we had to send a signal that we are still here. We have to do something. We developed curbside craft programs, and we reached out to daycare facilities. We got sponsors for that. We made art kits, and we put them in bags, and we decorated the bags, and we handed them out free in a bin outside our door with a free will donation jar sitting next to it so people could take home activities that they could do in their home safely. We're actually looking to expand that program now with the CARES grant that we got to develop that even further, because this response was tremendous and we were thrilled about that. Normally we do a summer art education program. It takes a ton of planning and a ton of work. And I only had two students that would come and be socially distant and partake in the classes, but we did it anyway because I thought it was important. Even though we were losing money on all of that.
Bye. Ms. Larson, you're doing great.
Am I moving over?
Yeah, just maybe a little, but it's such a compelling story.
I've never testified before, so
I'm... you're doing great, and please stick around for questions, and kind of wrap up a little bit, and then we'll get through other people. But no, you're telling a great story, and we're going to hear that from all these people.
Minutes. I had a feeling I might run over because I'm...
No, you're doing great, but just let's... Thank you. Finish.
Okay. So we tried to do outdoor art fairs, things of that nature, and right now where we're at, we don't know what the future is going to bring. Normally, I've already booked my concert series for the year. I haven't done that yet. Normally, I've already sold tickets. I haven't done that yet. And I'm really not sure how to go about that. We're planning a concert outdoors for July, and we'll see how that goes, I guess. But just in closing, I'm so proud of what the Legacy Committee has done for the state of Minnesota. I can often be heard to be bragging about how great it is to be in Minnesota and be able to know that my state recognizes the importance of the arts in our community. and I feel confident in saying about other West Central Minnesota organizations is that we feel strongly that our role is to improve the quality of life of our residents and our communities. And thank you for this opportunity to testify. I would like to give, if you wouldn't mind, Chairman Lilly, just a brief shout out to Representative Paul Anderson and being on the committee and being our neighbor. Hi, Paul. So thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Really, we very much appreciate hearing your story. And I've actually learned quite a bit. That's quite a large area, region that you're covering. And it's, I think your story is going to be what we hear, you know, from other groups too, that they're, you know, thinking outside the box, piecing together, you know, all these other organizations and the impacts. And but what a blessing to the community you are. And thank you for that. Mr. Representative Anderson, I don't know if you wanted to say a quick comment here since you were mentioned, and I'm sure you've got bought season tickets there.
Oh, Mr. Chair, thank you. And to Cheryl Larson, thank you for your presentation. The folks back home in Glenwood worked so hard putting their all into this, trying to keep Central Square going. It's an asset for the area. And thanks to the work they do, and it's so important for the quality of life in rural Minnesota. So thank you very much, Cheryl.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was a great kickoff. Thank you very much. So now, Ms. Lee May, you're next. I'm pretty excited to hear. I've got to get to see one of your show. I mean, I love comedy stuff, so I'm guessing that might be what's going on. And so welcome. Please introduce yourself and go ahead when you're ready. And I guess I got a text from my team, and we've got some time here, so I didn't mean to, but go ahead and tell your story, please.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Chair Lilly, and thank you, everybody, for giving me the space to talk a little bit about our organization. This is also my first time testifying ever. Hello, everybody. My name is Mei Li Yang, and I'm here on behalf of Funny Asian Women Collective, also known as FOC. FOC was founded in 2014 by Sai Mokta Duong Phu Sai Vong Sai, Naomi Koh, and myself, to combat the invisibility and dehumanization of Asian Pacific Islander Desi American women using humor and comedy. For us, comedy can exist as stand-up, sketches, storytelling, music, poetry, and videos. Comedy is powerful because it makes talking about controversial issues much more accessible and engaging. But for us, comedy is also about truth-telling at its core. Too often, Asian women are asked to censor ourselves so that we don't make our communities look bad, or to appease elders, or to make sure that we don't reflect problematic stereotypes of Asian people. So FOC was created so that we could have an uncensored space where Asian women can tell their truths without compromise. And when I say Asian, I mean the whole spectrum of ethnicities and identities. Our roster of artists and audiences include Hmong, Lao, Thai, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Desi, biracial, former refugees, immigrants, first, second, and third generation Americans. We are also feminists, activists, LGBTQIA, and trans. And of course, non-Asians are also part of our community. We are based out of St. Paul's East Side, and our programs include hosting a monthly cabaret series that was hosted out of Indigenous Roots. We often speak and perform at educational institutions around the intersection of race, gender, and equity. This past November, for example, we did the keynote address at the Overcoming Racism Conference. And we are also known for our Clapback Workshops, which is a series of workshops that uses the processes of comedy and improv to fight back against microaggressions. So standing up for yourself, but using comedy. So before I talk about how COVID affected us as an organization, I'd like to talk about how COVID affected the Asian American community locally and nationally. While there has always been xenophobia against Asians, even towards those who have lived in the United States for generations, during the pandemic, we saw a huge rise in xenophobia against Asians. which resulted in violence against women, children, and elderly. And I'm not kidding, right? Usually those people attacking Asian folks were going for some of the most vulnerable folks in our communities. CBS News even reported that between March and June 2020, there were more than 2,100 reports of anti-Asian hate crimes and discrimination. Locally, the Minnesota Department of Health even set up a hotline for people to report anti-Asian hate crimes. They reported receiving about 2,000 calls per day, and while some calls were meant to report hate crimes, at least half of the callers called to leave messages blaming Asians for the coronavirus. And as a Hmong person, I have personally observed how the virus has affected my community. Many Hmong families live in multi-generation households, and many people are essential workers who do not have the luxury to work from home. In the last year, I have lost many family members and had to make the painful decision not to attend their funerals as a safety precaution. And no matter what culture you are from, this is a terrible way to send someone off into the afterlife. So this is the, in addition to the, you know, this is the world that we were operating in, right? So I'd like to talk again about pivot back to thought. Historically, our work has involved live performances and face-to-face workshops. In March 2019, which I believe was March 13, 2019, as Cheryl had mentioned, when the pandemic officially kind of hit us, all of our scheduled performances and engagements were canceled overnight, which meant that 3/4 of our expected income was slashed, and some of our funded programs had to be postponed. When the pandemic hit and people lost jobs, many of the artists and self-employed people we know and worked with found it challenging to get on unemployment. And then some people were simply underemployed. They work. They just don't make enough money and dependent on contracts with FOC to supplement their income. As an organization, we knew that in light of the world around us, again, being in the Twin Cities, we felt the ramifications of social distancing, the pandemic, the rise of xenophobia, and the uprising around racial justice. We knew that we could not just hold up and wait out the pandemic. We needed to create work that responded to these moments and stay connected to our audiences. So we applied for pandemic relief grants and reimagined our work. This past October, for example, we were originally scheduled to actually perform at the Ordway. We had last year, we had a show that sold out close to 1,000 seats. But with that show being canceled, we reimagined our work and hosted the Flock Trunk Show, a pop-up comedy show on the back of a pickup truck. Armed with gloves, face masks, and more like hand sanitizer than you can imagine, we hopped from parking lot to parking lot in St. Paul and asked audiences to bring their own lawn chairs, which they actually did. We activated non-traditional art spaces and encouraged people to support small businesses. One parking lot performance turned into a drive-in comedy show as cars basically stopped and listened to us on their way to get coffee and bagels. We made videos with the Minneapolis Institute of Arts and the Center for Cultural Power, an equity-based nonprofit out of LA. This week, we are hosting a series of online classes on the craft of comedy. Our first one kicks off at 12 noon today. And next month, we are collaborating with Blackout Improv to host a Valentine's Day special live stream. So you may be wondering why comedy is important at all. In times of crisis, many of us turn to the arts for escapism, for healing, for understanding. We watch movies, we read books, recite poetry, we listen to music, we knit, we paint, we sing, we cook. This has always been true, and during the pandemic, even more so. And in times of crisis, we need moments to laugh, to breathe, to replenish. FOC has survived up to this point because we work in the business of joy. But our work and art making are important economically as well. Too often, outsiders are afraid of the East Side, using statistics only to cite problems, but we believe that creating spaces for art making, community building, and patronizing locally owned businesses contribute to more economic and cultural vitality. Art making and its accompanying retinue, meaning audiences, space, community, food, conversations, have the capacity to transform neighborhoods. Now, the Legacy Amendment has had a tremendous impact on FOC as an organization, as well as all of us as individual artists. A friend of mine actually once asked an artist, do you want to stay in Minnesota and make art, or do you want to go to New York and die? He just said this like 5 years ago, right? It was much funnier then. In light of the pandemic, joke is probably not funny. But she was picking at a truth, which is that the legacy amendment enabled us, and when I say us, I mean Minnesota. The legacy amendment enabled Minnesota to nurture generations of artists. It provided resources to make art more accessible to people on the margins, senior citizens, youth, communities of color, rural communities. The legacy amendment gave artists resources to take risks, to innovate, to put Minnesota on the map. And I don't know if you know this, but actually I think Chair Lilly alluded to this earlier, but national artists and arts organizations are actually jealous of us. They are not classy and envious. They are just straight up salty and jealous of the richness of resources we have. And the Midwest has often been considered a flyover zone, right? Which is really the belief that all the legitimate art making happens on the East and the West Coast. But the legacy amendment funding has made Minnesota a cultural epicenter to be reckoned with. Now, in addition to the pandemic, many things are happening. Small organizations like Falk are at risk. In addition to the pandemic, there's, currently conversation, for example, at the Minnesota State Arts Board about possibly blocking fiscally sponsored groups from applying for funds. But we know that small organizations are the backbone of arts access. Without this investment in the arts, so much is at stake. We would not only lose organizations that engage some of the most marginalized communities in Minnesota, but we would also lose out on birthing new work. And I don't know about you all, but I kind of like the idea of moving from being a forgettable flyover zone to being the belle of the ball. So I just want to thank you all for your previous support of the Legacy Amendment and for taking the time today to listen to all of us. Thank you.
Thank you. I did the mute thing. Thank you, Ms. Lee Vang. Yang, sorry. What a wonderful story you're telling, and I definitely want to attend one of your, even if it is one of the parking lot ones. That sounds pretty fun, actually. So, thank you for thinking outside the box and telling your story, and very powerful. Please stick around for questions if we have some at the end. Next, we have President Segsetter from the Ordway. Please introduce yourself and welcome to our committee this morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Lilly. I first want to give honor to the prior speakers and recognizing faces that the Ordway's worked with, and recognizing you've recognized the Ordway. I want to recognize all my colleagues here today. We are really one arts community here in Minnesota from all different sizes. So thank you, Chair Lilly, and committee members. As mentioned, my name is Chris Segsetter. I am the interim president of Ordway Center for the Performing Arts. I was asked to assume this role literally at the start of the pandemic. So I have been with the Ordway for 28 years. I'm a lifelong Minnesota, born and raised in the heart of St. Paul. My roots come from the Midway and the Frogtown area. On behalf of the Ordway and the Minnesota arts community, I am grateful to be a voice today to share with you some of the challenges that COVID has dealt our industry and through the lens of the Ordway, and how thankful we are for the legacy funds and the critical importance of these funds to our future. You will find, and you've heard today, that most arts professionals always view the world with half the glass half full, and we remain the eternal optimists. But no one ever anticipated that we would ask to be ceased to stop our business. So when March 13th happened, we were faced with something we had never thought about and what we would do. The Ordway was faced with looking at what it was needing to do to serve its mission and be fiscally responsible. What could we do? How would we do it? But on April 1st, some tough choices had to be made. We laid off 90% of our workforce because they are performance driven. And they're not staff, they're our family. Anybody who works in the arts, and you've heard it from the voices and the tones, this is a family of arts community here in Minnesota that is so rich. All the remaining staff were under pay cuts and a reduction of hours. The interesting things we've learned is taking care of a facility, the Ordway, it's in your capital state, right? The capital city, St. Paul. Most of you have probably been here, welcomed students to performances. But running the Ordway facility dark with no patrons is not what it was built to do. It was built to embrace the human spirit. Well, believe it or not, one of the assets we had to start putting in our inventory was vegetable oil, because who knew that's how you take care of your plumbing system if nobody's using it. So were there some learning moments? The other thing is I was being tossed with questions. What's our burn rate? What's our under a no-show scenario? Meaning, what is it going to cost to operate the Ordway? Well, we quickly found out that that number is about $200,000 a week. That number represents heating, cooling, security, insurance, and staffing. Pre-pandemic, the Ordway had a $20 million budget. My colleagues have mentioned the Ordway in their work with the Ordway. Many things happen at the Ordway here. It is a large facility. We run with 70% earned revenue and 30% contributed on an average year. All of a sudden, all earned revenue is gone from us immediately. Faced with the challenges like Cheryl mentioned, contacting patrons, refunding tickets, telling your story, having to tell clients that have bookings for rentals in the Ordway, from Falk to other people, that we weren't going to be able to be open to serve them, all had to happen. Fiscal year 2020 didn't end up the way we thought. The arts live on. We plan our arc in a whole 12-month period of time where certain activity takes more resources and other activity adds to the resources. For the Ordway, the activity plan from April to June represented over 20,000 students were supposed to be at the Ordway experiencing out, and 40,000 adults. That loss to our bottom line without having that activity in that period of time was a cash loss of $1.5 million to the Ordway bottom line. Because the activity from the end of the year was supposed to support the activity from the beginning of the year and balance it all out. So balancing became an impossibility. Annually, the Ordway serves over 300 people coming from every state and every corner of Minnesota. That includes our events that come through, our rentals, the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, the opera, the Schubert Club, and the Ordway's own programming. And of those 300,000, 60,000 school children come. And thanks to the legacy funds who support this program with heavily discounted tickets and bus subsidy, we couldn't do it without you. Thank you. I had a chance yesterday to look just from your districts alone. On an average year, 13,000 students would have visited the Ordway this year, enhancing and growing in their life learning through the arts. That was an impossibility this year. Many of you may have taken the opportunity to come down to an educational performance and introduce yourself to your students and share with them how important this work is to you and for them showing up and learning through the arts. We welcome, at some point in the near future, that you visit us again and introduce yourself to the students who come here to learn. But us, we too, had to look how to pivot. We couldn't be absent. We couldn't let the community forget how important the arts are. People have been gathering for the arts since the early Greek times, right? To tell your stories, to share, to gather. We knew it's in the fabric of each of us and our human beings. So how do we not let our citizens forget in these times what's important? Well, you pivoted to the virtual activities. We all did. We learned. We learned how to be more creative, to be engaging, because everybody's getting tired of Zoom. Everybody's being tired of kind of oversaturation in the market. So you had to identify yourself differently. You had to provide opportunities. You had to be the voice of other people's art. The Ordway had the luxury of having the ability to stream from their wonderful concert hall that was recently built, the Ordway, with streaming capabilities. We found our ability to serve our community coming in to represent their art and streaming through. Artists like Contus or the Lead Society came in and did their work. So we are a platform for other voices, not just our own voices of arts through the Ordway to share. We collaborated with the Sounds of Blackness, who knocked on our door and said, we feel like our 40-year rich presentation of A Night Before Christmas is needed now more than ever. Ordway, what are you going to do to help? Well, we pivoted. We figured out a way. We found a way to get their distribution out of their art. We could not do it at the Ordway because the government mandate changed again, which closed us down even tighter from doing this. But there was a church in town, and the Ordway then commissioned the work to be able to get the voices out of Gary Hines and the Sounds of Blackness. And any of you who know Gary Hines, you know that he is relentless with his passion and interest in what he is doing. And the virtual environment allowed us to go actually outside of the United States with his voice and his artist voice at this time and throughout the United States with everything. And it was an amazing opportunity that we would have never had the pandemic been. but we turned something into a positive for our community and beyond our board race. We continue to operate our educational performances virtually. I will leave you with these closing thoughts so my other colleagues can share their powerful stories. There's over $25 million economic impact to our state. The arts are important. They're vibrant. They're important on so many levels to Minnesota. And without the legacy funding, our voices would not be as loud and as proud. But there are human stories that are attached to this. There's everyone where you go. I'm sure each of my colleagues run into somebody that know where you work and share a story of what your art has meant to you. I myself had that happen quite frequently during the pandemic. And the most impactful person who reached out to me was an usher from the Ordway who noticed me behind my mask at the grocery store who said, "Do you think we'll ever be able to come back to work?" It is our job to make sure that we do. These are people in our community that we employ, their stories that we tell, and we look forward to serving Minnesota and all of you in the future. And thank you so much for the legacy funding. It is critical to us. Thank you, Chair Lilly.
Thank you, Ms. Sakes. We often start the legislative session going down to your facility for a Welcome to St. Paul event. And it's actually pretty neat down there with Rice Park. I'm glad you brought up that story at the very end about the, you know, just how many employees and, you know, the faces, you know, the usher, and just there's people that love that work, and it's part of their lives and their stories too, you know, the just watching, you know, not just the performers, but it's also the maintenance and the others. Thank you very much. On to our next Ms. Nadell, welcome. Good morning. Boy, this is great. Thank you very much for everyone so far. I do have to get one of those T-shirts from the Falk group. I think I got to be careful how I say it, but I definitely got to get one of those T-shirts, I think. But Ms. Nadell, thank you very much for coming, and please introduce yourself and go ahead when you're ready.
Chair Lilly, members of the committee, thank you so much for taking the time to hear from us today. My name is Tamara Nadell. I've lived in Minnesota for 30 years, and I'm a performer and director of institutional development with Ragamala Dance Company. Ragamala has been part of the Minnesota landscape for 28 years. We're a Minneapolis-based, woman-led, mid-sized nonprofit arts organization rooted in Bharatanatyam, the classical dance form of southern India. Under our artistic directors and choreographers, Rani and Aparna Ramaswamy, who are mother and daughter, Ragamala is nationally recognized for our original performance works, our extensive community engagement programs, and our work educating the next generation. In a normal year, we serve about 14,000 people through live in-person programming. Over the years, thanks to legacy funding, we've been privileged to bring our work to theaters, K-12 schools, and public spaces in so many of the communities represented here in this room. From the Ritz Theater in Northeast Minneapolis, to the Chinmaya Mission in Chaska, to Audubon High School in Lake Park, and many more. Like so many Minnesotans, the COVID pandemic has hit our company hard. In the first 8 months, Ragamala's income dropped 30% compared to the same time period in 2019. Physical distancing requirements have forced the cancellation of performance engagements totaling $191,000 in earned revenue, which is a loss of 26% of our operating budget. Ragamala will be feeling the fallout of this for years. To put it in context, a mid-sized dance company like ours generally has contracts in place 1 to 2 years in advance of a performance. The contracts that have been canceled for 2020 and 21 were negotiated in 2018 and 2019. Our staff has spent the past year working closely with the venues to cancel dates, reschedule them, and cancel them yet again, sometimes more than once. Some of those engagements may happen eventually, but the truth is that a lot of them won't. Right now, when we would normally be signing contracts for 2022 and laying the groundwork for 2023, contracts are at a standstill because, as you've heard from my fellow witnesses here today, the venues that would be booking us have laid off large portions of their staff and don't know when they'll be able to open their doors again. for a company like Ragamala, even if the pandemic were to magically end today, we would still be looking at 4 years of significant income loss. And it's not only our earned income that has been affected. The pandemic is hitting our contributed revenue as well. In the last few weeks, one of our private foundation donors made the decision to shift funding away from the arts in favor of much needed social programs, resulting in a loss of $34,000. But for us, throwing in the towel was never an option. As artists and as small business leaders, we're nothing if not creative, resilient, and scrappy. Since March, despite a reduction in our staff, which was already small, Ragamala has pivoted all of our operations to digital platforms. We've produced 37 virtual offerings, including live stream performances, newly created video content, interactive virtual artist talks, classes, and events that connect directly with people in their homes during a time of isolation. We've shifted all of our classes to Zoom and even increased our weekly class hours. We've continued to create new dance work from home via Zoom, and this summer we met outdoors in public spaces and parks to rehearse safely together. For a visceral art form like dance, virtual programming can never replace live performances and classes. But we do what we can, and since April, our virtual programming has reached nearly 80,000 people. Why is this important? Because throughout history, when Americans have faced our worst challenges, the arts have been an outlet to express our anxiety and despair, to make meaning of the rapid and drastic changes to our world, to create community, hope, and resilience during difficult times. As our fellow Minnesotans are reeling from the impacts of the pandemic, we've heard from so many in our community about the importance of our work in this moment. One woman told us that our virtual programming had, and I quote, filled me with stillness, hope, purpose, and inspiration. A man from Minneapolis said, and I quote, that our work had brought a lightness to my spirit that I haven't felt for weeks. Another called our programming a balm in this bizarre and tragic time. For our students, Ragamala Zoom classes have been a vital link to friends, community, and cultural heritage during quarantine. In the words of one of our 16-year-old students from Shoreview, at a time when there's a lot of anxiety and fear, dance has given me hope, joy, and relaxation for my mind. But the hard truth is that these programs don't bring in income. We've made the choice to offer the majority of our virtual programming this year free to the public, making sure that everyone can access it at a time when so many of our neighbors are struggling just to get by. But the making of this programming, our artist time, the time it takes to develop these brand new initiatives, and the technology to make it happen is not free. When so much of our income is in flux, the stability of legacy funding has been crucial. You should know that this isn't the first time that legacy funds have helped get Ragamala through a financial crisis. During the downturn following the crisis of 08, when many of our longtime private and corporate funders were seeing their own assets diminish and were compelled to cut back on their support, the legacy funding newly available through the State Arts Board was there to support us through a rough time. You've heard from others here that Minnesota is the envy of the country for our legacy funding. I happened to be serving on a panel for the NEA in 2009 when the legacy programs were first rolling out, and I can tell you the jealousy was real. What we're facing now is exponentially worse than 08. We don't know when we'll be able to open our doors for classes again, or present a live performance in public, or conduct a residency in a public school. Even when theaters and other public spaces open up again, how long will it be before people feel safe sitting side by side in a crowded venue? We're so grateful for the support that you've given us through legacy funding over the years. With your support, Minnesota artists will get through this time and will emerge on our feet, ready to move on to the next challenge. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Nadell. What a great story, and it's kind of neat to hear from the outreach you're doing and how the students come from so many different areas. I appreciate that. My granddaughter's a dancer, and it has not gone well with her little ex on the floor in the living room. It's actually pretty funny to watch, but it's not, you know, a little worried about our future of dancers. Thank you very much. Ms. Woods, thank you very much for, I was going to say thank you very much for coming down today, but I imagine you're in Duluth. Sorry.
I am, but Chair Lilly, thank you. I have testified in front of the Legacy Committee in the past, and I am honored to be back again to advocate for the arts in the Arrowhead region. So buju gakina awia anamiki kwe niwiz makwa indodam masabi kong indunjaba. I came into this life as anamiki kwe, Thunderbird Lady. I'm also known as Christina Woods, and I am the executive director of the Duluth Art Institute. And for folks who I know may be listening across the state, because we certainly invited our constituencies to participate in this discussion, I just want to make sure that folks know our geographic area. So Duluth is part of the Arrowhead region in the northeast part of Minnesota, situated on the very tip of Lake Superior. The Arrowhead region is the second largest arts and cultural hub, with the Twin Cities being the first in Minnesota. And again, I am honored to be here. And I do want to thank each of the representatives, especially Mary Murphy, who represents our area, for your work in community. And I want to make sure that you know that no matter your political stance or angles, I really appreciate that you are committed to your communities and you are committed to the people of Minnesota in serving in your political role. It's not an easy job. I also do want to say that I'm going to be doing a little bit of reading because I'm coming out of COVID and I actually have COVID brain. So I don't want to spend a lot of time searching for words. And so sometimes that happens when I become incredibly passionate about a topic and can't think of the word. So a little bit about the DAI. The Duluth Art Institute is a nonprofit that lives its mission through contemporary fine visual arts. We are 113 years old. The original mission was about access to all, and we continue to live that to this day. The DAI has been through other pandemics, world wars, and has somehow seen its way through each and every one of these crises, and we intend to do everything we can to make it through not only the pandemic, but the intersection of racial unrest as well. We provide a destination experience for visitors who travel to this area. We also provide services that are imperative to artists and patrons in our area. We operate two sites, one in downtown Duluth, which houses three galleries for the display of contemporary fine art produced by local, regional, and statewide artists. This location also houses two studio spaces and a dark room with access to one of the only color processing dark rooms in the state of Minnesota. We also have a fiber studio with floor looms and other tools that are accessible to artists who are not able to afford these expensive mediums for their art. Our second location is in a historic Carnegie architectural building, which we repurposed to save it. It's in the Lincoln Park neighborhood of Duluth, which is a neighborhood with the most health disparities leading to the worst outcomes. This neighborhood has a 17-year less life expectancy than any other neighborhood in Duluth, and we serve this community. This facility houses a clay studio, printmaking studio, and a photography studio, which is imperative for artists to photograph their sculpture and 2D work for website sales, for grant applications, for many purposes. This location is also where our in-person classes were once held. I share all this to demonstrate the impact of the Duluth Art Institute in our community and our surrounding area. I've been an executive in the art sector for a short while, I came to this opportunity by way of consulting as a diversity, equity, and inclusion consultant, helping organizations redesign themselves with inclusivity as their main lens. Before that, I actually owned and operated a construction company and held the general contracting license for that firm. Prior to that, I was an elementary education teacher. So like many of you, I come to the arts or came to the arts as a patron and a consumer. And I'd like to share with you what I've learned in my 3 years of immersion in visual arts education and artist services. When I first started at the Duluth Art Institute, I took it upon myself to interview 100 artists in our area. What I learned was, it impacted me. It was emotionally heavy at times, and it completely directed the vision for my colleagues and myself at the Duluth Art Institute. We had an exhibition up that honored the process of grief, loss in particular of loved ones. And I watched viewers go through that exhibition and unpack their own grief, be able to cry, be able to talk about their loss, and come through that with a sense of hope, either because my colleagues and I were able to be there with them, or complete strangers would meet them where they were at so that that shared space could be unsilenced around the pain of grief. At a member show, I met several artists that told me their story about the importance of their artistic practice to save them from their disease of addiction, and how for some of these folks, they have been able to stay sober for decades because of their creative process. I had a young woman share with me how her challenges with living with Down syndrome completely go away through her art, because in her words, she's able to talk about her art and she's able to feel what the rest of us have the privilege of experiencing normal. The Minnesota Black Fine Arts Show came through our galleries, and I watched a patron who was infuriated with the title of one of the pieces on exhibition and the narrative it was representing. And I watched a complete stranger walk up to this viewer and start asking very compelling questions about why it was upsetting. And the two patrons actually unpacked layers and layers of racism. They disagreed, but it wasn't acrimonious. They could turn that to the piece of art and take their feelings out towards it and come to some common ground and new learning around the construct of race. We had an exhibition of pet owners and their pets, and this was incredibly moving as people reminisced about their fur babies and what it meant to them. And this was a very beautiful fine arts exhibition. We had a national artist show at our galleries, and her work impacted me. Wendy Red Star provided an exhibition of images of reservation life. And it's something that I've struggled with for the entirety of my life, never wanting to take friends home to my residence because of the way my community looked. But when I saw Wendy Red Star demonstrate through fine art reservation life, I felt like my story is my human story, my story of existence, and it's okay. And she was telling my story. And as an Anishinaabe, oftentimes our stories are silenced. Hence the reason you now went through your DEI training from people of color to people of color and Indigenous to now Black, Indigenous, and people of color. because of the long existence of silencing that has existed, the visual arts and the arts among all of the sectors has the power to uplift these silent stories so we can feel empowered in our communities. We have a group of seventh graders who participate in an art movement. And an art movement is an opportunity to make change through art. Each year, these kids come in to learn several art disciplines, but primarily they're learning leadership. And the creative process allows them to learn the value of failure. And it's okay to fail. And we all fail. And some of us fail a lot. And if we can learn to fail and how to use that as a strength, then that is the catalyst for making change. Our first cohort of seventh graders went through a year of leadership training through this program, which was funded by Legacy Funds, and found themselves in front of Duluth City Council demanding, and it was demanding, change to their neighborhood park, which was riddled with litter and syringes and problems. The problems needed to be addressed, and they were, and now we have solutions for people who have no place to live, and we have solutions for people who leave garbage in that space. The kids are there using it, and they love it, and they were the reason it changed. So after the challenges we came through 2020, we continue to navigate. My colleagues and I work really hard to keep our hearts and our eyes on the future. The state of Minnesota is more visible now than in any other time. And I want to offer a couple ideas through the legacy funding so that you can grapple through this committee so you can grapple with looking at the future. I'd like to offer an opportunity for our state to show the world how we unravel from deep racial injustices and a pandemic. So what if Minnesota could actually come through the pandemic and racial injustice by becoming the epicenter for the birth of a new art era, one that demonstrates the value of community, unsilencing the silenced, and taking a strong leaning in approach to what I like to call dismantleism with a Y. Yep, with a Y, because it intersects with dystopia. And I think we can all understand what that means. Could we actually even be the driver of economy? What if Minnesota learned in 2020 that the economy might be 90% driven by the arts? A KPMG study identified that what drives relocation is not stock options, but it's arts and culture in our communities. So think about it. Think about every color you wear. Think about the design of your house or your car. Think about the images you hang in your spaces, the music you hear. You get the idea. It's organizations like the Duluth Art Institute and these here today and around the state that promote and develop the next storytellers of our history. And we are in his and her story right now. And it is imperative that we have partnership from the state for all the art sectors in the state of Minnesota. So unlike a for-profit business, nonprofit arts organizations provide much needed services at low costs, so patrons are able to access the arts without barrier. And we deeply believe that art access is for everyone. That means revenue streams are always managed in order to allow everyone to participate. The COVID-19 pandemic, like for our for-profit businesses, have dismantled our organizations and caused already some to disappear. The Duluth Art Institute has lost 50% of our revenue due to closing facilities and class cancellations and loss of membership and donors. In a typical year, we will see 60,000 people come through our galleries. 12,000 youth and adults will be educated in our classes, and we will employ 100 teaching artists. This year, we have zero. 2020, we have zero class participants. We've employed 3 artists, and in 2020, we've had 3,000 visitors to our galleries. I can't even measure in dollars and social impact how that affects our region. There's no measurement. Our film industry has lost $5 million. Our performance industries have lost well into the millions in our region. Even our vendors, our office supply vendor, our bookkeeper, where we buy paint, all of these businesses have seen a loss because we are not spending dollars in our community at the rate we used to. Well, we're surviving, and we're doing it with the pandemic grants. We're using these to keep our operations functioning and covered so we can hopefully seek other grants as startup funds for our business. We need to be running at full capacity. And as soon as we are able to, we need to be positioned financially to hire people to run our technology because we're doing things in ways we never thought of. We need to have people to help manage a new business model in operations. Legacy dollars are important now more than ever. We have to recreate ourselves. We are constantly pivoting. And we do this because our community needs us. Our community, we feel we're letting our community down if we are not able to engage with them. I just want to say again, thank you. And thank you, Representative Murphy, for your representation for the arts. You have been a strong advocate for us for many, many years. And we are grateful for the legacy dollars we've been able to utilize for our area. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Woods, and glad you survived COVID and so far. And yeah, I don't think we saw any effects of that the mushy brain thing you were talking about. Good job. Thank you. Representative Murphy, I don't know if you have a quick comment about your local group there. If you'd like to offer. Whoop, you double muted. There we go.
Mr. Chair, it's mutual. What the arts and the artists to Northeastern Minnesota give throughout the region. Is so important to the lives of all the people that live and work here and visit. And with the natural resources that we have that are enhanced in every aspect of art through individual or group working together, Minnesota is stronger and united, but definitely legacy funding has to continue in every way that everybody's mentioned this morning. And your stories are so revealing about your values and your beliefs, and you are passing those on to all Minnesotans, and we can only be stronger for it. So thank each of you that are here today to tell us your stories, because they will not be forgotten.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Well said. Mr. Hodge, thank you very much for coming, and we'd like to hear your story. Just to kind of give you a game plan, we need about... I'm sorry to leave you with about 5 minutes, and then hopefully we can get to a couple of questions, and then I kind of want to tell people what we're going to do with bills for this committee. Mr. Hodge.
Great. Thank you so much.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. I'm honored to be here with all of you, and I'm honored to be here with my esteemed colleagues from around the state. I've been very moved by their testimony this morning. I'll try to shorten this to just a few minutes here. Much of what I have to say has, in fact, been said. The Guthrie, I'm Joe Hodge. I'm the director and CEO of the Guthrie Theater in Minneapolis. The Guthrie serves some 400,000 Minnesotans annually through our three performance spaces, 1,100 seats, 700 seats, and 200 seats, plus restaurants, bars, gift shop, et cetera. All of our production shops are under roof. I was directing a show out of town on February 25th. I sent an email to my senior team saying, you know, I think we need to watch this pandemic. I think this thing could be real for us. I flew home for the opening of the Buckeye on March the 6th. On March 11th, we announced our following season, which was the most ambitious in our history, with a corresponding budget of $31 million. 2 days later, on the 13th of March, we canceled the remaining performances of Twelfth Night and the Buckeye. March 28th, we canceled the rest of our season. And by late May, we announced that we had to cut our staff by nearly 80%, laying off or terminating over 200 positions. And that doesn't even include all of the artists who are contracted on a show-by-show basis. It doesn't include all of our food service workers employed by Culinaire, et cetera. Assuming that we can return sometime in the coming fall, the estimated losses of earned revenues for the Guthrie is in excess of $27 million. So during that time, we still wanted to serve. We wanted to fulfill on our mission and on our vision and on our values. And I'll just share a couple of very brief examples. It would have been our 46th annual production of A Christmas Carol, and when it became clear that there is really no viable path to being in front of folks in the traditional way, I thought, you know, the story is as important as it has ever been, the story of a person who comes to learn that they're not just responsible for themselves, but they're also responsible for their neighbor. I didn't want it to go, I wanted us to figure out a way, so we made a film. With my partner, E.G. Bailey, I directed this production of A Christmas Carol. And we kind of told folks, well, we have this film if anybody wants to see it. We had people from all 50 states, plus D.C. and the U.S. Virgin Islands, as well as 15 other countries who purchased the opportunity to watch this version of A Christmas Carol. And over 10,000 households in the state of Minnesota, reaching every single county in the state. And the statistic I'm perhaps most proud of is that 1,900 educators representing 1,000 unique schools in Minnesota signed up to watch the film at no cost to them, to their schools, or to their students. And their estimates of how many students had access to the show is over 125,000 kids. We also do a food drive every year with A Christmas Carol. We ask people to bring food to the theater. And we couldn't do it for obvious reasons this year, but we said, look, let's do a curbside pickup. And we opened that for 3 days. We had volunteers from the theater. And those 700 pounds that is typical in a year, we far exceeded that goal and collected over 8,300 pounds of food, which we were able to distribute to folks in need in our communities. Native fellowships for the Dickens Holiday Classic funded by MSAB. We were allowed to have Native fellows on the project in directing, production management, and theater management. We've been working with Indigenous Directions, Ty Defoe and Larissa Fasthorse, to decolonize and indigenize our spaces. And after the killing of George Floyd, I felt compelled to set the microphone down and gather feedback and insight from Black artists in our community. And we're in a year-long project with Black artists from the Twin Cities, which will culminate in a festival this coming May. I want to close by saying, You know, the Guthrie began in 1963 with Sir Tyrone Guthrie and his colleagues traveling the state. And the original Guthrie was built with the monies from 8,000 discrete gifts from across Minnesota, including very sweetly $6.37 from a Sunday school in Mankato. The Guthrie was built by the citizens of Minnesota as a gift to themselves. It is legacy support that allows us to continue to return on that investment now, more than a half century later. Thank you for your past support. Please protect legacy arts funding. It's more important now than it ever has been. The arts will have a crucial role to play, as Christine described, in the return, not just to economic vitality, but the arts have been forever useful in building bridges, empathy, and connection. The arts remind us that there is far more that we have in common than whatever divides us. The arts, in general, are powerful tools in a democracy. They make us better citizens. They make us better humans. Minnesotans understand that the arts are crucial to understanding ourselves and, as importantly, to understanding our neighbors. With all of the revenues being so unpredictable right now, we need legacy to be stable, to protect the proud and extraordinary artistic legacy of this state. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Hodge, and I'm sorry, my apologies to all of you for this short committee time, and I just really grateful. Mr. Redmond, do you have a quick closing comment kind of about the impacts of COVID? And I mean, we've heard these great stories, but just real briefly, if you could, sir.
Well, Mr. Chair, only, and members of the committee, only that we may have tried to squeeze too much into this at
yes.
this time, so our apologies if, nope. if there weren't questions, but it's a big story, and with 1,200 organizations around the state, with the breadth and the variation, the diversity of them, it's impossible for us ever to give you a complete story of everything, so we tried to give you a balanced flavor. There are a million other stories to tell you. But the main thing I would that I think we all want you to leave with is two things. One, how dedicated the arts community is to the people of Minnesota in terms of doing this. We want first-class arts for everybody in Minnesota, and we will continue to drive to do that. But the second thing, though, is that the problems that we face after everybody is vaccinated, we will still be suffering from problems from this a year or 2 years out. The contractual issues, the problems, and it's everything from the artists in it to the people who clean the floors are going to be affected by this. But that ultimately means that there are kids and people of middle age, older people who are not going to have the kind of art that they want. We'll do our best, but we very much, as everybody has said, appreciate and need everybody's help, including the states. So thank you.
Thank you. And this committee's under our all the members I've talked to is very committed to the arts and trying to be solid, committedly to the future here. I'm gonna have to apologize to members. I don't know that we just have time for questions. Representative Huzan, if you could be very quick, maybe we could sneak in one, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's Hassan.
Okay, good morning.
I was just going to say that if we can, I know we don't have time, if we can get, you know, the contact information of everybody that testified so we can reach out to them personally, that would be great.
We'll have our staff do that. Thank you. Representative Zhang, briefly, if you could. Sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say I'd like to communicate with some of the folks here, particularly the Ordway Theater.
Great. Thank you. Thank you again, everyone, for coming out or coming to this Zoom and contributing all you do to making Minnesota great. I just have a few seconds. I just want to switch for a second. The bills, this is kind of everybody that's going to be putting in bills for our committee. We just have a backload upstairs. And please know, reach out to our staff or to my office. And if you have an idea and want a hearing, we're open to hearings. But you don't necessarily have to have a bill per se in the traditional sense. We just have a serious backload upstairs, and you know, much of what we've done in the past, we're going to have to do a little bit differently. And it doesn't mean that we don't want to hear your proposals, all these other organizations beyond just the Arts Today, but everybody in all fronts. But we, you know, please reach out to our staff, and that might be better than doing the traditional bills. I mean, you can still do that route, but we want to make sure that we're able to do the work and hear the story. Again, thank you this morning, the arts community, and we know you're doing great work, and we're just blessed by that. And like we've heard so much over and over again, it's just we learn from the arts and we improve our lives, and I'm grateful for your work. With that, our committee is adjourned. Thank you.